So I really want to thank very especially the organizers for inviting me. I did change not only the title, actually I changed the whole presentation, and you will see, which is even worse. But so basically I sent the title for the presentation some time ago, and then I realized I was going to speak after Michelle and Carl about CAR T cells, and I really felt like the bar is too high for me. Just, you know, step down, and I will be presenting something very different. That is trying to discover new antigens from what we call the dark genome. And let me start with disclosures. Actually, the first one, Memo Therapeutics, is a company that was part of this collaboration to the work that you will see, so it is relevant to disclose that here. So the dark genome is something that, I mean, it's dark not because it's bad, so Star Wars didn't arrive there. It's dark because we don't understand what it is, and it is also huge. It's more than half of our genome, sorry, it's more than 98% of our genome. Half of the dark genome, so the protein coding part of the genome here is 4.4, actually it's a bit less probably. Half of the remaining part of the genome is not annotated, so a lot of repetitive elements and other pieces of DNA that we don't understand. But one half of that dark genome is annotated and is composed of endogenous retroelements and transposable elements in general. There are many different families, and I won't go into details, but my lab now is doing a lot of efforts to try to understand how these retroelements contribute to immunity in general. Does the immune system see these retroelements? We are also getting interested in other parts of the dark genome, like the link RNAs, and it is something that is really fascinating to discover how the immune system can interact with this part of the genome. But what I will discuss today is target discovery, so trying to identify pieces of the dark genome that are being seen actually by T cells in tumor cells mainly. This has been done. We are not the only ones doing this. Most of the people doing this use an approach that is based on analyzing all the transcriptome systematically with little, cutting in little pieces and then aligning them. And it's a systematic, non-biased approach. That is not what we are doing. We are trying to understand the biology of the different parts of this of this dark genome and try to go from the biology to understand more. And actually, the first part of this started a few years ago in the lab and could be design, so it's not completely dark genome, it's something that is between the dark genome and the coding genome, and it is a family of non-canonical splicing events between conventional endosomes, or conventional exons, and pieces of introns that are retroelements or not, but the ones I will present to you are retroelements. So non-canonical splicing is something that you may not have heard about, but it's something that happens in all cells, where basically the strong splicing signals that are at the end and the beginning of exons are not used systematically. In some cases, what happens is that weak splice sites are used in introns, and the consequence of that is that a piece of intron ends up being coupled to an exon, or sometimes to two exons, and so a piece of intron can be maintained within. So this is not what we usually call intron retention, which is read-through of transcription through the intron. This is really splicing events. On one hand, you have a strong splice signal from the exon, and on the other side, you have a weak splice signal that is found either by chance or by mistake, or we don't know why, in the intron and particularly in retroelements. So we thought this would be an interesting potential source of tumor antigens because there are many oncogenic mutations in tumors that are known to cause epigenetic defects, including T silencing, so defects in T silencing, so Ts are overexpressed in tumors, that was known for a very long time. There are also many oncogenic mutations and mutations that are passenger mutations that affect the splicing machinery. So tumors also have a lot of defects in splicing. Putting this together, we thought maybe there will be some deregulation specific to tumors that will cause overexpression of this type of non-canonical splicing events. So together with teams, with collaborators in Curie, a few years ago, we developed a pipeline that is based on public ways of doing this, but that is mapping, the basic principle is that it maps reads that are split between two places of the genome, and we selected those for which one piece of the RNA read is mapping on the exon and the other piece on one retroelement. Most of them are in introns. The program then looks for splicing sites. So what we identify are splice junctions between exons and pieces of introns. And then we manage to make that, to do those analyses on tumors. We started with TCGA, and then we looked at healthy tissues and tried to find the ones that are specific. And then we went on, and that is what I will show you. I stole this picture from Ton and adapted it to my purpose. But so this is what people have been doing in many other, with many other approaches. We call that proteogenomics or something like that, where you take RNA information and then immunoproteomics or proteomics to try to put them together and to see what. And so we can also couple that to functional analysis, as you will see. So first thing, how many of these things can we map in cells? So the numbers are here. These are, so we call them jets. I forgot to mention that. I think it was here. Yes, we call them jets because for junctions between exons and transposable elements. Okay, so we are mapping, what we are mapping is junctions. It's not whole RNA isoforms or anything. It's really the reads that overlap those points of break between an exon and a retroelement. So how many jets we find in cells? A few hundred, that's the response. With this particular quality of RNA and length of reads, when you take better RNA quality, this can go up 5 to 10-fold, depending on how good you are at doing that. So it can go up to 2,000 in cell lines when you do a very deep analysis. But in TCGA, it's between 200 and 400, let's say. And these are, in blue, all the juxtatumor samples from TCGA, and in red, two tumors, lung tumors. We started with that. We now did all the TCGA and all the GTEx and so on, but this was the beginning. And in these two cases, lung adenocarcinomas and lung squamous, in both cases, the number of jets is a bit higher than in normal lung. But this is not, it's not in all tumors. In some tumors, you just have similar numbers. Now, all these events, so one dot is one patient with the number of jets, but if you take them all together, it's several thousand different jets for the whole TCGA, and this is the mapping of the breakpoints, okay? So the breakpoints on the exon are always on the last nucleotide or first nucleotide when the donor is an exon or when the exon is an acceptor, but they are all across the different retroelements. So there are not hot spots, at least when you do it this way. So it's somewhere in the middle of a retroelement and the beginning or the end of an exon. If you only consider these breakpoints, these jets, and you try to cluster the whole TCGA, this is at this knee, but UMAP or PCA will do the same. Only based on the nature of these splicing junctions, you can cluster tissues together, and you can cluster tumor together. So they are different in different tumor types or tissue types. And this is a heat map where you have all the tissues. We are plotting here the mean value for one jet. So one line is one jet, and one column is one tissue or tumor. And what this says is that you have some jets, some junctions that are all across all tissues and tumors. You only have two tumor types, which are the two lung tumors, but it will be the same if we include whole TCGA. So some jets are present in all samples, all tissues, and others are specific for tissues. So these are kidney tumors are here. You have a group of jets that are enriched in kidney. And then that is true for all the other ones. In tumors, you have different jets, but you have a group of jets here that seems to be enriched in lung tumors. And this is true for all tumors we have analyzed. And some of these are also recurrent in different types of tumors. And then we went in to try to see if some of these were really specific for the tumors. And this is what we found. So here you have all last tumors in TCGA and all juxtatumor samples. And so we filtered out all the jets that were present even in one sample in the TCGA. We now also did that for the GTEx. And you still find some jets that are recurrent. So one line here is one patient or one tumor sample, and you see every time you see a little dot, it means that the jet was present in that patient. So this is exactly the same breakpoint to the nucleotide. So it's exactly the same sequence present recurrently in many patients and then absent in all the healthy tissues that you see here. And some of them are even more recurrent, but present in a few normal samples, sometimes in one or two, and other times in 10 or 15. And this is true, it will go like a gradient to the ones that are present in all tissues and tumors. And here you have some examples of the level of expression of some of these jets that are recurrent in lung adenocarcinoma. This one is present in 164 patients out of 554 and zero out of 679 healthy tissues. This is an example of what we call a tumor-specific jet. This is another one, and then we have some tumor-associated, like the ones here. Again, almost half of the lung adenocarcinoma and only five positive samples among the healthy ones. Another one here, which is also tumor-associated because it's present in one of the healthy tissues. When we went across the TCGA, amazingly, some of these jets are recurrently found in different indications. This one here, so again, is one junction, is present in zero of the normal tissues and is present in 23 of the lung adenocarcinoma, 71% of ovarian cancer, GBM, head and neck. So the distributions are very, very unusual. We don't understand what is common between all these tissues, why they produce this exact splice junction, and it is not found in any of the healthy tissues. So these are just examples. So this was the first message. We have something that we call jets that are expressed in all human tissues, some of them in all tissue types, some of them are tissue specific. A subset of jets is expressed recurrently. It's only a minority. I didn't tell you that, but a lot of these split reads or junctions are present only in one sample, in one patient. We discard those for the purposes of this study. Jets can be ubiquitous, tissue-associated, tumor-associated, or tumor-specific, to the extent of what we can look at. So the first thing I will show you is that we think that there are T cells in tumors, in human tumors, that are specific for these antigens. So what we did here is take lung surgical resections and cut them in little pieces and put them in culture, either analyze them directly, so ex vivo from the tumor, or after 20 days of culture, either with the peptide or without the peptide in IL-2, so day 0, day 20, and then we looked for tetramer-positive cells using a panel of 40 different jet peptides that were predicted to bind to HLA-A2, and these are HLA-A2 peptides, and this is, again, the method described by Ton, using different colors and combinations of colors for tetramers to find the specificity. So we spent a lot of time to make sure, to be confident that these were specific, and a lot of controls, and finally, this is the kind of image that we get. At day zero, we see some tetramers that are positive, a minority, and you see a few cells. It's hard to be convinced that these are real T cells specific for the jets. If you culture the tumor for 20 days here with IL-2 and peptide, you can stimulate both in the tumor and in the draining lymph node a rupture population specific for these specific jets. In this one here, you see that in the tumor, the presence was quite strong at day zero, and you can still amplify it. Actually, in the lymph node, there were more rare, but you can detect it very well after 20 days of stimulation. And this is the summary. We tested five patients, and we ended up finding reactivities against these jets, predicted this panel of 29, I think, jets. I think the person who did the experiment, Antonella, is probably here. She can correct me, but it's something around 30 shared jet-specific peptides. And in three of the patients, we found reactivities. The frequencies are here, and some of them, and this is at day zero, okay, just out of the tumor. This is what happens at day 20, so after stimulation, and these are again examples at day 20. Stimulations were done either with or without the peptide, even with IL-2. In many of the patients, and again, these are the same five patients, we can stimulate T cells specific for these jets. I don't know if we were to do this with normal peptides from the tissue, whether we would find the same or not. Certainly with mutations, several groups, including Toon, show that you can do this kind of experiments and find T cells specific for the tumors. The other thing that we did here, and I don't have time to show you the whole thing, is derived clones from healthy donors, from PBMCs, stimulating with the peptide for 3 weeks with monocytes, autologous monocytes, and then clone the TCRs and re-express the TCRs. And we show that these TCRs, and it is shown here is the tetramer staining for these different peptides after the stimulation in vitro. And here are the cloned, or SAM2 here, two cloned TCRs that were re-expressed in resting in human CD8 positive cells, and the CD8 cells expressing the TCR from the clones were used to kill tumor cells with the peptide here. In these two cases, we are inhibiting this with anti-class 1 antibodies, that is ongoing. These two TCRs seem also to kill the tumor cells without peptide, but we are in the middle of confirming that result. So it really looks like peptides derived from these junctions can be presented on MHC class 1 in tumors, and we can detect them with T cells on the surface of tumor cells. The way to address this issue in more definitively is to look for peptides presented on MHC class 1, and this is what we did here. So we basically did the same analysis, started with the junctions, translated in silico, so produce the proteins corresponding to those junctions in different combinations according to exon being a donor or acceptor, and then we put this library of junctions into a mass spec protein discoverer, a program that looks for peptides in a mass spec, peptides eluted from MHC class 1, and try to find matches. So do we find peptides derived from these junctions in presented on tumors MHC class 1? And the response is yes, we do. All these peptides are derived. So one line here, one column is one tumor or cell line, fresh tumors or cell lines, lung adenocarcinoma again, everything. Some of the peptides are from the junction, so they overlap the breakpoint, and others are derived from either a frame shift. All of these have been filtered for any UniProt, any conventional exon protein that is present. So they are all non-canonical, but some of them are on the junction. And we characterize the TEs involved and the genes involved, the recurrency. We couldn't do it for HLA-A2, but we were lucky enough to have 8 donors that were HLA-A3 in this cohort. These are public immunopeptidomic samples. We had 8 HLA-A3, so we could look at the recurrency of the peptides. And that recurrency, which is shown here, is similar to the normal exome. Of course, UniProt is hundreds or thousands of peptides, and we only have something around 24. But we do find recurrent peptides, so peptides that are found in more than one patient in this approach here. So from this part of the talk, we can say that jet-derived peptides are presented on HLA molecules on tumors, and T cells specific for jet-derived peptides are present in primary human lung cancer patients, and we can reproduce that in vitro and clone the TCRs. So let me show you briefly a second part of this, which is that we did it in mice to try to really show that these are tumor antigens. So the analysis was very similar. We used the same pipeline, basically, and we took 3 tumors, MC38, B16, and MC101. These are the number of jets, so a few hundred again, the ones that are common and the ones that are unique to the different tumors. The ones that are acceptor and donor, nothing was very different from humans, and the breakpoints, as I show you, either the beginning or the end of the exon and somewhere in the middle of the T. Again, you can separate the tumors according to these jets in a PCA analysis here. And again, when you look at a heat map, this time one line is one sample and you have replicates, so we have the 3 tumor types here. This is unsupervised clustering, so the tumors cluster together, B16 with melanocytes, which are quite close, but you still see some differences, MCA101, MC38, and then you have MTEX, brain and different tissues that again show clusters of disjunctions that are tissue specific. We filtered here the ones that are common across all the cells. And then you can also identify, searching for the specific ones, some that are either enriched in tumors or very specific for tumors and very low in different. So we coupled here all the healthy tissues I showed you before in three groups to show you that some of them are tumor specific, like MCA101. And others are present, for example, this one in two different tumors. So we did also the immunopeptidomics. It is harder to look for peptides in mice because the number of peptides are lower. But again, analyzing five tumor cell lines, we found repeatedly peptides derived from these junctions. And these are only the junction peptides here that I'm showing to you. So now we can start asking if these are tumor antigens in mice. And this is what we did. First experiment, we just injected the tumor in a group of mice and then waited for 2 weeks and did ELISpots on the spleen of the mice or tumor-draining lymph nodes and looked for reactivities against these peptides. So we included as a positive control a mutated peptide that was described by others, and we checked the expression in MC38. And you see that when you don't put the tumor in the mice, you don't have much. But when the mice have the tumor, you now start seeing. So the gray dots here are without re-stimulation ex vivo, and the red ones are with the peptide ex vivo. So you see very nice ELISpot responses after injecting. So the mouse is seeing this antigen on the tumor. And here you have four examples of jets that are also immunogenic in this mouse model for tumor immunogenicity. We went further to vaccinate against this with jet-derived peptides and adjuvant, and we can detect very nice responses in the vaccinated mice against different jets. And then if you implant a tumor after vaccinating the mice, you have in some of these peptides, like this one, and this one, a delay in tumor growth. The tumors end up growing, so you don't protect completely. But this is very similar to what you see. Oops, sorry. This is very similar to what you see with the control peptides. You delay tumor growth in these models, and this one, which induces very nice tumor T-cell responses, is not at all affecting tumor growth. And then we also tested this in two therapeutic vaccination models, and we again saw delays in tumor growth in this model here, and this is a lung metastasis model. Therapeutic vaccination with lung peptide also reduces tumor growth. So they behave as tumor antigens. The last thing I will show you is this. We attempted to modulate jet expression in tumors and see how that would affect recognition. And this is what we did. This is ZDB1 is a molecule known to, is a repressor of T expression. It's a methyltransferase of histones that methylates histones and represses retroelement expression. It has no effect on splicing itself, but by de-repressing the retroelements, we thought we maybe would increase jet production. And this is what happens in the knockout. You can do a differential analysis of the jets and then found a number of jets that are overexpressed when you knock out this gene in B16F10 here. Here you see the heat map of the expression in different replicates from the control or the knockouts. So we are inducing expression of these jets in the tumor cell line. The overall effect on tumor growth is that, so you have here the growth of B16 and treatment with anti-PD-L1 or not at day 7. This is the growth of the controlled tumor cells, and these are the ZDB1 knockout. You see that there is already a delay. PD-L1 here is not affecting a lot the growth of B16, which is known is quite resistant in these conditions. But when you treat the tumor that was knockout for PD-L1, for ZDB1, you do have a stronger anti-tumor effect. But this was known, and I'm not saying that this is due to the jets that are induced. The line becomes more immunogenic, also maybe because of retroelements or other antigens. What is interesting, I think, is this part here. So here we are following the immune response in the mice against two jets that are among the ones induced or expressed only in the ZDB1 knockout cells. And you can see that after treatment with PD-L1, especially in the knockout cells, you have a very nice immune response for spots in the spleen here. in the case of these two ones. So the immune system, when it is unleashed by anti-PD-L1, seems to be recognizing this type of antigens in this particular model. The conclusions from this part is that non-canonical splice junctions are recurrent in mouse tumors. Some are tissue-specific and some are tumor-specific, same as in humans. Junction peptides are presented by MHC molecules, and in mice, JETs can be tumor-specific, immunogenic, and protective in some cases. I think that's it. We would like to propose that JETs represent a new class of shared tumor-specific antigens, and that tumor-specific JETs can represent a new target for vaccination, TCR discovery, and so on in immunotherapy. Let me spend a little bit of time explaining you how the people that did all these. So the pipeline for discovery of JETs was initially developed by Alexandre Huy in Marc-Henri Stern's lab, together with Christelle Goudeau, and they put together the initial pipeline that was then adapted a lot with the help of other people, including Benjamin Sadaka and Josh Waterfall, who is here. The work on, and then all this group of bioinformaticians have developed all the pipelines to analyze and compare different data sets. The mouse JET work was done mainly under the lead of Marianne Burbage, together with Sandrine Guadalupe and Blondine. The human JET work was led by Antonella Merlotti, together with Iago Arribas, who helped a lot with all the immunopeptidomic analysis and brought all that expertise to the lab, and I want to thank you very much for your attention.